Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the February 2022 online Midwinter Home Education Conference.
Title, I thought, oh man, that is kind of a downer of a title. Like, where did that come from? And so I asked Adeline, like, where did this idea come from? Where did this title come from? And she said that someone on her team had heard me say that before in a talk or on a podcast episode, and it was really kind of eye-opening for them. And, you know, it's a realization I had kind of early in my parenting, in my struggles with my first child. And here is my cute family. And so I'll just take a little while to introduce myself. My name's Jessica Croker. I have been homeschooling all along. I have six children. My oldest is the one on the left, Brenna. And then the young man in the green shirt is now serving a mission. That's Jonah. My next one is in the yellow. That's Logan. And he decided his junior year to go to public school. So I'm not homeschooling him anymore. He is going to graduate from public school this year. Then I have Ian, who's in the blue shirt with the cast on his arm in this picture. He's now 14, almost 15. And then I have Hunter, who he just turned 13. In this picture, he looks kind of small. He still looks like a little boy, but he's now taller than me also. And all the way on the right is our little baby Eva. And she is 10 now. She is 5/8 of an inch shorter than me. So pretty soon I'm just gonna be the shrimpiest person in the family. But each of these, well, and then there's Greg, my daughter's husband, there next to her over on the left. So we've had a fun homeschooling journey, but it's a lot of different kinds of personalities to parent. And what is the role of a parent? I want to be able to see in the chat. So I want you guys just to write in the chat, like, what is the role of a parent? So Nicole wrote to guide them. Any other thoughts? What's the role of a parent? Teach them. Kika says to teach them. To teach them how to love and how to feel love. I love that, Michelle. Any other thoughts? I think, you know, these are the things that we understand. So Kara says to care for their physical needs. For sure, we need to care for their physical needs, right? These helpless babies come to us and cannot do anything for themselves, right? They can't care for themselves at all. It's really our job to care for their physical needs and to teach them right from wrong. Michelle says that's right. They need to figure out how to discern and how to act in the world, right? They come completely helpless, not knowing how to do anything. So these are all roles that we have. I've noticed for me, that sometimes, even though I have these ideals in my head, that my job is just to teach them and guide them and love them wholeheartedly, I often feel like I need to mold them. I need to make them do things. I need to make sure that they have all the skills that they need to have before they leave my house. So that means that they need to be able to manage money and they need to be able to use their time wisely. And they need to be able to take care of their own personal hygiene and do it in a certain way. They better fold their laundry and put it away right. And they need to kind of do a lot of the things that I think that they should do. Does that ring true for anyone else, or am I the only one that feels that way? I think it's just kind of part of the natural way of things, right? I'm the big person. This is a little person that doesn't know anything, and I need to make them do things. So, you know, in that title, right, parenting, it's something that we do. It's an action that we take. It's a way of being. And then what are weaknesses? What are weaknesses? Here's the dictionary.com definition. That a weakness is a state of being weak, right? A lack of strength or firmness. It's a kind of feebleness, right? Maybe something that's inadequate or defective in a person's character or a fault, right? Who has those? Who has those kinds of faults or inadequacies? Or maybe it's something that you're just self-indulgent, a special fondness for something, like I have a weakness for chocolate, okay? Or an object of special desire, something very difficult to resist. So we can keep those things in mind about what weaknesses are. I know that sometimes in my parenting, if something is happening with my children where I'm teaching them the same thing over and over and over again, and I can't get them to behave in a certain way. I can't get them to treat their siblings the way I want them to, or I can't get them to load the dishwasher properly. I mean, there's a big range of things, right? I can't get them to say a more thoughtful prayer when we're having dinner. Right? It's always just the rote, right? Often I feel if my child isn't doing it the way I taught them, then I must be failing. I'm a bad parent. There's something wrong with me. I'm doing it all wrong. I don't know if anyone else falls into that kind of self-blame, but I certainly do, right? If my child is not getting it, then I am a failure. And as I was thinking about this, I had this picture in my mind. I was trying really hard to find this photograph I have of me kind of doing a silly pose on the floor of my dorm room in college, and it was finals week, and not a speck of the floor is visible, right? There's clothes and books and stacks of paper everywhere. And it wasn't just my fault, right? My roommate was on board with me. We were just both a total mess, right? And I was trying really hard to find this picture so that I could show you, right, that I have weaknesses too. So here we go. Here is my propensity for being messy. I would say this is a weakness of mine. It's a fault that I have. But I have parents who are meticulously neat. My mom was so good at being organized. She used her planner in the most efficient way. She always knew what was going on and when, and she kept a journal also really meticulously and orderly. When I was a kid and people would ride in our car with us, they would ask, "Is this a new car?" And I would say, "No, I think this car is like 10 years old." But my dad is so meticulously neat, right, that our cars always seemed brand new. And then there's me. That's kind of a mess, right? I would rather not put my clothes in drawers. I like to have shelves in my closet so I can just have piles of things that I can see, so I can see everything, right? I like to be able to see what's going on and what I've been working on. So I have this art space so that I have proof that I made something today, right? I kind of like to leave the evidence out. Now, this weakness or fault of mine has nothing to do with the way I was parented. I have really good parents, and they definitely took time to show me how to organize my bedroom and make sure that my things were kept neat. And here I am, I'm 43 years old, and I'm still struggling to figure out how to best organize myself in a way that works. And I certainly have figured out a lot of things, right? My phone was a revolution that I could set reminders so that I could be on time for things. Right? Despite all my parents' best efforts, I still fall short in some areas. And it has nothing to do with my parents. I just still have weaknesses. Yesterday, I was talking to my oldest, Brenna, and she said, I was talking to her about this idea, and she said, well, you need to read them this blog post from 2005. So this is when Brenna was 5, and here's the picture that went with the blog post. I'm just going to read it to you. I get so frustrated with Brenna sometimes. She escapes into books in her own little world and does her own thing most of the time. Now, this is when she was 5 that I wrote this. She is now 21, and I could probably say the same thing. She has a great imagination and is an amazing reader for a 5-year-old, but when it is time to go out the door or feed the rabbits or go potty, it drives me crazy how she is totally oblivious to anything I say. It is of the utmost importance to her to get her pretend picnic set up perfectly before she can focus on anything else. She calls them her sets. They are a very integral part of her life. Barry helped me, that's my husband. Barry helped me wade through my art room this past weekend and get it in order so that it is functional. We sorted scraps of fabrics, tossed things out. He rearranged shelves so that things were stored in logical places. I did this. And here are my shelves. I made sets. Took all of my little ephemera, art supplies, and seed pods, and sticks, and rocks, right? And the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. There are things that no matter how much we nag, right? They're just going to be a part of who our children are. So what is our job, right? There was nothing I could do, and there still isn't anything I can do with Brenna to help her be more timely. She's still often in her own little world, and nagging her and trying to get her to do things differently really never made a difference. So let's talk a little bit about child's development, right? And the time of life that our children are in. Childhood is learning to navigate a world that has roles that really aren't explicitly told to us. Sometimes our parents explain things, but our childlike minds don't totally always comprehend, right? We learn through experimentation and trial and error. And then we make assumptions and test those assumptions. And then we form kind of an internal belief structure that helps us predict how and why things happen. And this is created by our social structure and our family of origin, and also just by our natural tendencies and preferences, okay, that are inside of us. We build this scaffolding of belief at the same time as our capacity for creativity and logic and reason are developing. Okay, so a lot of the assumptions that are formed in a child brain are not logical, right? Because they don't have logical thinking processes yet. And this means that the internal scaffolding of belief about how the world works, it can be illogical. Sometimes it can even be destructive to our functioning. But we all go through this, right? We all kind of form ourselves in collaboration with our family and all of the environments and experiences that we have. The beliefs and assumptions that we form in our development may be things explicitly told to us, like boys don't cry, or black and navy blue do not match. Okay? We may get some things that are explicitly told us, but more often than not, they're just assumptions that we make by piecing things together. Okay? And so this is what is happening for our children. They are figuring out how to navigate the world, and they're creating this internal scaffolding to predict how things will happen, what works best. Okay. And right, the things that we hear and see, imagine, feel, we kind of integrate all of those into something that makes sense to our developing brain. Okay. And in each kind of stage in our development, we're negotiating different things, right? When we are in the school years, we start to figure out, like, am I capable of doing things, right? Can I take initiative and make something that I want to have happen, happen, right? And often if we're shut down, we just think I'm inadequate. You get wallowed in guilt or inferiority. In those teen years, right, we're really trying to figure out who we are and figure out our identity, who we are as a person and what it means to be us and how we fit into the world. It's important, like I like this. This is from Erik Erikson. He was a Freudian psychologist who thought Freud had it all wrong, but he did think that we went in through stages. And this is kind of the framework that he created, and it's been shown to be pretty stable and valid over time. So let's talk a little bit about brain development, right? From birth to age 5, there's a huge explosion in synaptic connections. And then there's a pruning, like we just take those all away, the things that aren't necessary. And this is when, right, our children are forming. A similar explosion happens at the onset of puberty. So during our kids' teen years, their brain synaptic connections just explode. They get all sorts of different experiences available to them because their brain really is kind of going through a new toddler stage. Okay. And that's really important for us to understand, right? The pruning and organization of their prefrontal cortex happens from the motor and sensory centers in the middle forward toward reasoning. So our younger teenagers, like they get coordinated, their bodies and muscles grow, right? And they might be better at like fine motor skills and being really crafty. That happens often for girls. They may get better at a musical instrument or sports, right? They have a lot more richness in their sensory experience. Things sound more interesting to them. Things look more interesting to them. And those parts kind of start pruning earlier and organizing themselves. And over time, that organization works forward. So the front part of our prefrontal cortex is where reason, self-control, and decision-making happen. And those happen last, probably not until early 20s, right? So when we're teenagers, right? Sensory experience, like everything is richer. Pleasure is more pleasurable during that time. And even our memories from that period will be more vivid for the whole rest of our lives. Like, I can remember every word from every Indigo Girls album that I listened to in high school. Every word, word for word. I can still remember those things. But if I listen, like if I find new music that I like now, I never memorize the words. It takes, I mean, I'd have to sit down and make a concerted effort to really try to memorize things. And, you know, that's just kind of how our teenage brain works. Because we have a heightened ability to feel pleasure, we have a heightened sense of smell. So that's really linked to our emotions. There's all these things happening that really become a part of us forever. But we don't stop developing after our teenage years, right? And there's been more modern research about adult development. And so I thought I would just kind of quickly go through these stages of adult development, because at the same time our children are developing, we are becoming more ourselves. Now, there's the concrete development stage, right? That says, my experience is really my only reference point, right? And acceptance by family and social culture is essential to survival. And this is where about 25% of adults stay, that I just see things from my own perspective, okay? And then we move into the abstract operations stage. And when we reach the abstract operations stage, we have the ability to think more abstractly and subtly, right? But we can't totally see things from another person's point of view, and our self-worth is tied to achievement. And really, we believe our own way of thinking is the truth. Like, it is the only way to see anything. And this is where about 50% of adults get. After the abstract operation stage is the context aware stage. And this is where we start to have the capacity to observe our own thoughts and realize that things can have different meanings from different points of view. Right. And so some of us can reach this stage in our late teens or in our 20s. Right. But this is when we start to really have the capacity for empathy, and especially for people and living things outside of our immediate group, people that aren't like us. Now, can you see how parenting, right, really helps us get through these stages? It helps us become more developed. After the context aware stage, there's the construct aware stage. And we realize that, right, we only perceive a fraction of reality, that there are spiritual dimensions happening, right? And this all is kind of fluid and interwoven. It's not really so delineated, but in order to explain it, right, we have to create some stratification. But we start to realize that our life is constructed through our own perceptions and interpretations, and then we can take responsibility for creating our lives, right? And the research shows that about 2% of adults reach this stage. And then there's the unitive stage, or this is where we really experience connection with everything. God feels more immediate, and we really have a sense of we're all in this together with everyone that we come in contact with, right? And so as our children are trying to figure out themselves, right, we are developing and continuing to become who we're meant to be at the same time. Right. At the same time, our children are figuring out how to be industrious and really having a sense of who they are. We are negotiating our capacity for intimacy, right? Intimacy is really being willing to be seen and known. And our children see us. They see us in a way that is unique for them, but it's completely honest and pretty clear, but also clouded with a lot of their assumptions, their developmental assumptions. But also we're negotiating generativity, like that we get to create things. And it's interesting, like in our 40s, we tend to start to renegotiate our identity, like who am I really? Kind of at the same time that our children are trying to figure out who they are. So we leverage each other's growth, right? We're there as guides to be alongside our children as they're developing, because they are helping us to become who Heavenly Father needs us to be, right? We are collaborators with our children. We're not the directors, right? And we all are just on this path of life. And as parents, we're a little bit further down the path. We can be a guide, but our children have a different perspective and can see things differently. They see us differently, right? I know for me, often the things that bug me about my children are the things that bug me about myself, right? They're a special kind of mirror for us to start to see ourselves more clearly and realize and broaden our perspective. So our children leverage our own growth. And that's the beauty of living in families. At a recent training, so this is from Tad R. Collister in a BYU devotional that he gave, he said, at a recent training session for general authorities, the question was asked, how can we help those struggling with pornography? This can, you know, and we can see struggling with anything, right? How can we help anyone that has struggles or weaknesses, right? And Elder Russell M. Nelson stood up and replied, teach them their identity and purpose. A core task of childhood is to know their identity and purpose, right? We need to leave, well, we all will leave childhood with a sense of who we are, with some kind of definition of ourselves. And what we get to do as parents is influence that self-definition that our children come to. That is so, so crucial. It is actually really why we're here, right? What's the first song we teach children in primary? I am a child of God. We want to really have them internalize their identity and purpose. So I want you to grab a piece of paper and just write a list of 10 things that answer the question, who am I? Right? We all play so many different roles. And because of part of what we were just talking about, you may have, I am a child of God first, but what other things are you? How can you say, who am I? Right? How do we form our identity? Right? Like, how do you know who you are? I would really like it if you guys would just type in some things. Like, how do we form our identity? How do you know who you are? You could even maybe share some of those things that you wrote down. We form our identity based on our relationships with others, right? Like, I am a child of God. Yeah. I'm a wife of my husband. Thanks, Michelle, for humoring me. Right? We really do not exist in isolation. Right? We define ourselves based on relationship, okay? And we really form ourselves in the context of relationship. And that's really so important for us to understand, right? This is a relational world. And our unique understanding of the plan of salvation, that we are literally children of heavenly parents, like this whole life is a relational endeavor. Okay. Adeline wrote, I am a child of God sent to earth with talents and passions to help me accomplish my particular mission on earth. Right. And it's interesting, right? We know we have a purpose, right? That's really helpful. And like Elder President Nelson said, essential that we know our identity and purpose, right? And we get these ideas of who we are from cultural norms, from explicit teaching, from experiences that we have, but also our own internal perceptions and assumptions, strong emotions, preferences, maybe inspiration or revelation, right? But our thoughts, feelings, right, and actions, that kind of loop that we go through every second of our lives, and our internal experience of what's happening in our relationships and the things outside of us, really make a difference in how we define ourselves and how our children define themselves, right? And the way we identify ourselves really shows what we value. Okay. So we could ask, right? Maybe someone would say, I'm an athlete, right? My husband would say, I'm a cyclist, right? I'm an officer in the Air Force. I am a father, right? I would say, I am a mother. I am a yoga teacher. I am a friend. I am a daughter, right? But the way we identify ourselves shows what we value and where we think we belong, okay? And the world is more than willing to define us. Our internal experience is really important, but it's influenced by what happens outside of us. So forming an identity is a collaborative effort. And we can just unconsciously let the world tell us who we are. And it certainly wants to. And at this point in the history of the world, we have so much information, and we have social media, and there's podcasts and Facebook and Instagram posts and Twitter feeds that we can just create this intravenous drip in of thought into our minds. I feel like our kids do this, right? That start to feel like your own thoughts that really influence your emotions and the way that you define yourself, because it's a relational way of being, right? But with kind of a nebulous relationship. But identity is forged in relationship. But it is experiential. So I am going to invite you to sit tall. We'll do a little meditation. Just close your eyes and just kind of feel where you are in space. See if you can feel kind of the weight of your lower body supporting you, whether you're sitting on a chair or curled up on the couch or sitting at a desk, wherever you are, just feel the connection to your bum, of that weight, wherever you're sitting, the length and weight of your legs, and let yourself feel grounded. And let your spine get tall from there. And just bring some awareness to your breath. Just the very fact that you're paying attention to your breath, it will smooth out And then you can feel maybe the sensation of the clothes on your skin. Be aware that you're listening to the sound of my voice. See if you can even notice the thoughts in your mind. And then you can ask yourself this question, right? Who is aware? Who is aware of the sensation of clothes on my body? Of the weight of gravity here on my seat? Who is aware of the sound of my voice? Who's aware of the thoughts in your mind? So the thoughts aren't you. You are the one that is aware of those thoughts. Even your body isn't completely you. There's some part of you that is aware of your body. And see if you can kind of just settle into this aspect of yourself that is aware of being, aware of breathing, aware of thinking. And what qualities does this part of you have? Can you notice how big it is, how far that awareness can reach? Maybe a sense of light. Right, kind of possibility and expansiveness. Just bring yourself back and open your eyes. I'm curious what your experience was with that. Does anyone have? You can write in the chat any responses to what that experience was like. Right, but who we really are, we often define by thoughts, the limitations of our bodies, right? But it is something bigger than us that we can experience. Right? And it's an experiential thing that really solidifies it more and that helps us feel more connected to our source, to our Heavenly Father. Right? And that's what we want for our children, is to have those experiences that really helps them understand their identity, all the way to the core of who they are. And those experiences that they have while their brains are developing really are the ones that will be most potent for them, which is a double-edged sword. It's an amazing opportunity, right? But then there also will be things that happen to them that are self-defining, that are sad and hard. And that's okay. That's kind of part of what this life is all about. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and just talk about, instead of focusing on weaknesses, right, and trying to fix our children, which I know you guys know that's not what our job is, we can focus really on their strengths and on ours. And this is a framework developed by Martin Seligman, and he is kind of the pioneer or the founder of positive psychology. He thought, okay, we are spending way too much time trying to figure out all the things going wrong. What are the most essential things that are right about people? And they did a big study of all of the wisdom literature from every culture on earth. They looked at African tribe myths and stories. They looked at all of the writings from the Near and Far East. They looked at ancient Christian writings. They looked at myths from Norway and Greece and a lot of South American literature. Anyway, they tried to kind of distill all of the strengths of human beings through the history of time and codify it in something that was universally applicable. And they came up with these six areas that everyone has strengths in, and we all have things that we're a little bit I'm more drawn to than others. Justice and its kind of sub points, fairness, leadership, temperance with forgiveness, humility, prudence, self-regulation, humanity, kindness, love, social intelligence, courage, bravery, honesty, perseverance, zest, wisdom, creativity, curiosity, love of learning, judgment, perspective, and transcendence, appreciation, gratitude, spirituality, hope, and humor, right? These are kind of the core of the positive parts of human nature that we all have. And when we can focus on our strengths or focus on our children's strengths, right? That really forms or informs the way we feel about ourselves and the way we function in the world. We're all familiar with this scripture. If men come unto me, I will show unto them their weakness. I give unto men weakness that they may be humble. And it is sufficient for all men that humble themselves before me. Sorry, things are obscured by the things I have up on my screen. Says, but if they will humble themselves before me and have faith in me, then will I make weak things become strong unto them. Another way of saying this is, often our weaknesses are our strengths out of context or overused. So often the things that we see in our children that we see as their faults really are their strengths. So how do we help cultivate our children's strengths? Here I've got a picture of my 13-year-old Hunter in his Halloween costume that he made. He spent months on this armor. It's out of cardboard and duct tape and spray paint and all sorts of things. But as he went through this project, right, he just kept asking for more. And it was for more supplies, different tape, different paint. It went through several iterations, right? It took him quite a while to figure out how to make things fit the right way. Right? Each of our children have different things that they're good at. And we can really leverage our strengths with novelty and challenge, especially in those years of adolescence when brains are developing and they have a heightened ability to feel pleasure. Things that are new and really hard to do are really exciting for those kinds of brains. We can help cultivate strength through pattern and consistency, right? So, one thing that we've done in our family that I actually learned at an LDSHE conference is when we kneel down for family prayer at night, whoever's turn it is to say the prayer, everyone else says what they love about that person. Now, this might not work in every family. It often is sarcastic or silly in our family. But inevitably, right, that person knows that people see what's good about them, right? And sometimes it's the same thing. For years, I think a lot of the kids just said, "I like the food mom cooks." Right? And I was like, "Well, I do other things other than cook. I actually don't prefer to cook. That's not my favorite thing that I do." But it was the thing that was nourishing to them, right? The thing that they saw. But pattern and consistency also helps us develop strengths. And we want to point those things out. Okay. So when one of our children is driving us crazy with an out of context use or overuse of their strengths that we want to fix, right? We can point that out and say, "I see that you really, really like independence and doing things your own way, right? I see that in you." Or, "I see that you're really creative and like to do things your own way." Or, "I see that, right, you're really passionate. I see that you have a real deep sense of fairness," right? So we can spot those things and point them out because that really will become part of their self-definition. And then just be delighted by our children and their quirkiness and uniqueness instead of bugged. Sometimes. In our parenting, we need to define success with love at the center. How our children turn out is really out of our control. We can't control them, but we can control how we show up. Right. And develop ourselves in the context of the relationship with our children, that we get to show up how we want to show up and with love at the center, that is the lens that we're seeing through. And that we practice compassion not only for our children, but for ourselves. That when our children we are struggling, we can see, "Yes, you're struggling just like me." Right? You are a human. That, with Brenna, I can see that we have a hard time both focusing on multiple things at once, right? Just like me. Our children are human, just like us. Parenthood is about your development. And you're totally going to mess things up, right? And that's okay. That is how it's designed, right? Adulthood really is trying to kind of weed our way out of the misunderstandings and silly assumptions we made as children, right? We don't have any control over how our children interpret the things that we do. I've had a lot of those experiences as a mother of adult children when they tell me about how they interpreted something that I did. And I was just like, man, that was so not what I intended or the way I experienced it. It's totally different for them, right? But we have those same kinds of things that happen with us and our own parents, right? We are imperfect. Our parents are imperfect, and that's part of this life. I want to end with this quote from Elder Oaks. It says, "Now is the time for each of us to work toward our personal conversion, toward becoming what our Heavenly Father desires us to become. As we do so, we should remember that our family relationships are the setting in which the most important part of that development can occur. The conversion we must achieve requires us to be a good husband or father or a good wife or mother. Exaltation is an eternal family experience, and it is our mortal family experiences that are best suited to prepare us for it." As homeschool moms, we get to be really an integral part in helping our children define who they are. It's such a privilege, right? And in turn, we get to become who we have the capacity of being. So thanks for spending this time with me this morning. And I'll close in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.